Harih Om Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Saha Viryan Karavavahai Tejasvi Navati Tamastu Mavid Vishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Garadhara Shivasari Gaura Bhakta Brinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Paramatma Sandarbha Adhyayana 2 Adhikarna 5 The Jiva is infinitesimal by nature. Okay. Riti, having established the infinitesimal nature of the Atma, the author further describes that the Jiva is addressed in scriptures as Mahan, great, because of possessing outstanding qualities, and not to mean his size is huge. Right? Because then, because you're going to bring up that they're going to all these different explanations are there of the Jiva, and so then these different parties are going to come up with you know, bring these things up that are in the no. Either they'll bring them up from the scripture, or they'll bring them up from their own speculation, like that. So in this way then, because it says he's Mahan, like you say, he's a great man, doesn't mean he's big in stature, right? Purvapaksha. Sava esha mahan ajo yam vijnanatma. The Atma is great, filled with knowledge. Brihadaranyaka Upanishad 4.4.22. Here, because of the word mahan, great, the Atma cannot be small or anu. Right? You know, so that's they can't digest that they're 1/10,000th, the tip of the hair, right? You know, like Uttara. Since the Atma is described as anu in scripture, the word mahan must not mean great in size in this statement, right? Because there's no contradiction. So since there's already pointing that he's anu, he's small, so this mahan must mean something else, right? Because if we're taking the material energy as inferior, then this mahan must mean his qualities are greater than the material energy, right? Because there's going to be some comparison, right? The Atma, which is anu, is called great because of its outstanding qualities, not its size. Similarly, though Paramatma is all-pervading and full of knowledge, he is called smaller than the smallest to indicate that he is difficult to understand. Right? Because at something so small, you can't understand what it is. So that's it. He's greater than the greatest, so he's beyond understanding. He's smaller than the smallest, you can't understand. It is explained. Tanguna saratvad Yad vyaparesha pragyatvat. No, pragyavat. The jiva is knowledge itself, just as the Lord is so designated, because the quality of knowledge is his essence. Brahma Sutra 2.3.27. Right? So knowledge is the essence of the jiva. Right? Eternity, knowledge, and bliss. So these. It may be explained in another way. So that's also because sometimes they're explaining the Ananda aspect, sometimes the knowledge aspect, sometimes the eternity aspect. And because of that, then there might also, someone might get confused and think, oh, it's different descriptions. It may be explained in another way. The quality of consciousness is inconceivable like a medicine. That is its essence, which never leaves it. Because Atma has this quality, Atma is said to pervade the whole body. Right, through consciousness. Just as the consciousness of pragya has inconceivable shakti, so the Atma itself is inconceivable. Thus, the word mahan means that the Atma is most excellent. This meaning is not shown in the sutra, but is understood by the example of sandalwood. That is expressed in another sutra, Brahma Sutra 2.3.22. That should be understood. Right, because even though there it may look like this, but you have to see the context, because there is no contradiction between the scriptures. Right? We may come up with it because we're attached to particular details, and so then we'll see that, no, this detail means this, when actually it's not. It's another aspect. You know, it's just like let's say someone's attached to his particular lifestyle, and he's living a proper lifestyle. And so then when Krishna says, you must perform your duty, he'll go, see, I can perform my duty. You know, why are you telling me I have to, you know, give up material attachment and this and that? It says here I can do my duty. But doing your duty doesn't mean you don't give up the attachment for it. Right? Because that's the thing. We're used to the thing is that if I am endeavoring, that means I want the result. And if I don't want the result, why would I endeavor? So they're working on that principle. And so then they're naturally going to say that it says do your duty, so that means I get the result that I want, rather than you do your duty and you get the result and that's offered to Krishna. Right? Does that make sense? So we tend to look at things, what is beneficial for our particular point of view. That's, you know, it's a disease, but whatever. Moreover, the qualities of the jiva are like the warmth of fire. The qualities never leave the atma as long as the atma exists over all time with no beginning and no end. Right? Because you know something through its qualities. That's without the qualities, you don't know what it is. Any object is known through its qualities, like the qualities of the active aspect. Right? No, maybe, I say, is the what would be the thing? The qualities are, what potential?
Inherent.
Mm-hmm.
Inherent.
Yeah, inherent, but it's a matter of what can be applied. If he's strong, it doesn't mean that it's necessarily being applied, but it could be applied. That's what could be applied. So nouns, you know, which are objects, then they're based on verbs. Right? Because the verb is then the action that it that can perform. So every object has existence, has uniqueness, has an activity it performs, and has a result it gains. Right? So these four then are always going to be inherent in an object. So you can only know it through the qualities. So the soul, you know, because there's consciousness. Because there's consciousness in the body, you can tell the soul is there. When the consciousness leaves, then you know the soul is gone. Does that make sense? So that's the yeah. The Shruti shows this. Nahi vigyatur vigyater viparilopo vidyate. Knowledge never leaves the atma. Brihad Aranyaka Upanishad 4.3.30. Right? So because eternity never leaves, knowledge never leaves, and that principle of bliss never leaves, because they're always looking for happiness. These qualities manifest in the jiva in liberation, just as qualities of male and female manifest in a person as they mature. Right? So Satchitananda matures in the living entity as they attain the transcendental platform. Right? Pumstva dvivat tvasya sato dvivakti yogat. You cannot say that the jiva's knowledge is not eternal, because it exists during deep sleep and simply manifests on awakening. It is like maleness, which is unmanifest in a child but appears when he grows up. Brahma Sutra 2.3.29. Right? So the knowledge is eternal. So this idea, even if he's covered by ignorance, but the point is still the nature of the living entity remains. He's still knowledge. That's real. Right? Because we're saying avidya is the problem. That's the illusion. But the point is he's by nature is knowledgeable. He is knowledge. So therefore, that knowledge can be covered. But it doesn't. But you don't have the aspect of this knowledge being covered, that means the nature of the jiva goes away or the jiva is false. Right? Jiva's qualities, which are similar to the Lord's, are hidden. From meditation on the Supreme Lord, a shakti, which defies darkness, appears by the mercy of the Lord, like the power of a medicine. Right? So that jnana shakti. Having understood the Lord, one is free of all bondage, suffering, birth, and death. By meditation on the Lord, on leaving the body, one goes to the third place, filled with the Lord's powers, and without Maya's influence, and is fully satisfied. Svetasvatara Upanishad 1.11. Right, so this third place, that means the... Do we know what that means? It means, you know the context? He must be saying there's other places. So, yeah. Because otherwise, if he goes to the third place, it means you have the material world, you have beyond the material world, and then you have beyond that. You have the spiritual world. You know. But there may be some other thing. The strength of the body, bliss, vigor of the senses, and mind, consistent knowledge and sarups of the jivas arrive from the Supreme Lord. Go Pavana Shruti Madhava. Yeah. So they arise from the Lord because they're part and parcel of the Lord. And then, but that's what we have. That's what we work with. So it's not that will go away. It may become covered, but it doesn't go away. Right? So we'll say, yes, the jiva has shakti, but that shakti is coming from the Lord. But that's the shakti that is the living entity. So then in that way you can say it's shakti of the jiva. Right? If it were not a matter of these qualities manifesting or not manifesting the jiva, one would either perceive the qualities at all times, being eternally manifest, or not perceive them at all, not being present at all in the jiva. Right? If they're not there, they're not there. But if you see sometimes they're there, sometimes they're not, then that must mean that they're there and then covered. Right? This is the case of material objects which have no consciousness. The jiva did not have these qualities inherent in the sarup, there would be no tendency to manifest them, right? Because material energy never manifests consciousness, right? Even though people say, the life comes from matter. If suddenly, you know, something in their house came alive, that would freak them out. Even though that they claim that this is how it works, right? So that's the point is, dead matter has no consciousness, so it will never manifest. While the jiva has consciousness, so you might see when they're sleeping, you don't notice it, and then when they're awake, then it's there. Yes?
That means the third stage, first stage is the existence here, and the second stage is the primordial existence.
Okay.
The third stage is talking beyond even the primordial level of Mahatma.
Oh, okay. So beyond that aspect. So they're not talking... So they're still taking it as Turiya.
Yeah.
Like that, okay. Okay, so the second... So then the manifestation here, then before manifestation with Mahavishnu, the Mahatattva aspect, then beyond that, third state. Okay, that's interesting. Another way to do it.
They are going in that direction. I think it's good to start looking these books.
Yeah. No, because these things are good. You get that and then put that in the footnotes. You know, because it just makes it clear. So you see is that there's different ways to explain it. Because we're using consciousness. Then we're going to say, you know, there's these four levels. And then beyond that, there's Turiya. And then beyond that, there's Prema. You know. So then, because the existence is Turiya. Like the Dham is Turiya. Like that, but then the devotees acting in that dham to serve the Lord, that's prema. Right? So whether you're in, so if you're acting on that plate for rati or relationship, then that will be in the dham. Otherwise, it will be in the dham or the existence of Brahman. Right? So in any case, it'll be in Krishna's existence, potency. But whether it manifests as Brahman, Paramatma, or Bhagavan. So the Dham, that's existence in on the Bhagavan level. Does that make sense? Yes? No? Thus the jiva is Anu by nature, but pervades the body by his qualities. Right? So that's how you know the qualities are there. Ramanuja explains it in this way. Just as a fiery object remains within a glowing form, So the consciousness remains within its conscious form. Even if the effulgence arises as a quality of the substance, it is also the fiery substance, not merely a quality like whiteness. Right? You know, it's not a generic quality, it's the quality of. That's how you know it's fire, because of the fiery manifestation, because of the heat, because of the light. So it has a particular form, it has the particular qualities, it has a purpose, you know, it has what it can accomplish. All these qualities can be perceived from the fiery object. Right? But they're not just some qualities. They're actually inherent. You know? Because we're so used to you just attribute this to this and put this here and there. That they're inherent. Right? Does that make sense? It is the substance, since it takes shelter of itself, it can be present elsewhere. It has a form, and it reveals things. This is different from whiteness. The ability to reveal things means its natural ability to reveal other things. Effulgence is sometimes classed as its quality because it always takes shelter of the substance, depends on it. Right? So these qualities are taking shelter of the soul. Right, so therefore they're inherent in the soul. Yes.
The doubt is that if it is inherent, why should we practice anything to uncover it? Because if it's borrowed, then we have to endeavor. We have to borrow it from some other object. Hmm. But if it is an inherent nature, it should manifest on its own.
So, yeah, okay. But then what would you be doing during that time of letting it manifest? You say you'll do nothing.
Exist.
And what does that existence look like?
I don't know.
You know what I'm saying? Because otherwise, they're going to go on with the lifestyle that they like doing.
Yeah.
They're saying, I don't need to follow a spiritual lifestyle.
Right.
But the point is that they say, I'll do nothing, but then they'll be following a lifestyle.
Yeah.
If you do nothing, means nothing. Right? So they're not actually, all it means is that I'm too lazy to do this, it can manifest whenever it manifests.
Yeah.
But then, if that's the case, then the point is you're hungry, you need to eat, you know, and by your karma you get food, so you don't need to make that. You don't have to get up and go and rummage around in the refrigerator looking for things to eat. You just sit there on the couch and do nothing, and you know your food will come to you. But they're happy to make an endeavor for their food. Or if they want to sleep, they'll be happy to go into the, you know, lay down on the bed and make that arrangement.
Mm-hmm.
So why can't they make this arrangement? Right? So that transformation of things is there. So if something's covered, why you wouldn't want to endeavor to uncover it? You know?
So
it's a fault of inconsistency, is it? Yeah, the inconsistency, but also just not understanding that something's covered, you need to remove the cover. It may be its nature. It's like, let us say your gold ring falls in the mud. You're just going to wear it like that and say, well, its inherent nature is gold. It'll manifest whenever it's going to manifest. No, you'll wash it off. Like that. So that's the thing, is that something becomes covered, then you like that. Because otherwise, if it's that, or another way we could do it, about this, you know, it's covered and it'll manifest when it is without your endeavor. I will bring, you know, a nice bowl. And in this bowl, I'll put some really nice something to eat. Right? Then I will put a lid on that. And then I'll put it down in front of you. But you can't make the endeavor to uncover it. It'll just uncover itself by nature, because that's the way its nature is, according to what your philosophy. Does that make sense? And so how long is the guy going to sit there and, you know, due to false ego to establish his philosophy while everybody else is sitting around and eating and going, ooh, this is great, you know, like that, you know? You're not going to eat, I'll eat it, you know. Yes.
That aspect, the principle of, like, it is there already, it will manifest, that it's positively shown by the devotees as having hope against hope. That Krishna's mercy will come, all I need to do is that I need not bother for it, but I do my service. Like, in the uncovered stage, what you are supposed to do, that is what is given as sadhana for us. We just do the activity, and whenever it will get uncovered, it will completely get, by Krishna's mercy, it will happen. So we are not actually bothering about in one sense.
Did you catch that? There he's saying, he's agreeing with your philosophy, but taking it much further. You know, like someone will say, you know, you're God, I'm God, we're all God. The Prabhupada said, yes, we're God, but we're small God. You know, so using that approach, then yes, you don't need to uncover, because who are we? What is our power to uncover ourselves from the material energy? So therefore, then the acharyas, you know, following the scriptures, then they give the activities that you would be performing on the uncovered state. So even though you're covered, you still act in the position by practicing, acting in your uncovered state. By doing that with the right attitude and devotion to please Krishna, then Krishna will remove the covering. Right? So we technically don't remove. So our focus is on pleasing Krishna, and Krishna will take care of everything else. So in that way, then, you know, I was taking the other approach, because we're taking it, why do I have to do sadhana bhakti? Because if I'm my nature, it'll just manifest on its own. But he's taking it. No, sadhana bhakti is not the endeavor to uncover. Sadhana bhakti is the endeavor to develop love for Krishna. And as a side thing, the uncovering happens.
Well, then, just for the sake of argument,
okay,
then we can argue is that, yeah, we agree, but in that case, not every practitioner succeeds, because we see practical that the practice, like Prabhu mentioned, it's on a certain quite an elevated level of practice, but the consciousness is lagging behind, because there's no identity for that level of sadhana. So some develop and their consciousness being elevated, but some not, and then they just go away, they go astray. So how can we explain that?
How can we explain how someone,
yes,
following the same sadhana, someone becomes inspired and
exactly,
someone
exactly,
gives up? It's a matter of the attitude, right? Because that's the whole thing. Bhakti is an attitude where we're acting in the same activity to please ourselves. Because for us, sadhana bhakti, we're following the same activities, but it's sadhana, but it's bhakti, because it's in pursuance of trying to please Krishna, following the acharyas. But that same sadhana, that can be followed by so many other persons with other material benefits, you know, in mind. Someone who wants karma could be following the same sadhana. Someone who wants liberation can follow that same sadhana. Right? You know, because the point is this, sadhana means it's a practice. It's a regulated practice that is, you know, from the recommended religious activities. Right, because religious means it's pious, so it will elevate the living entity. How far will depend on the consciousness. So you're saying is that the consciousness is lower, but I'm a servant of Krishna. That consciousness everybody can have. You don't have to have, oh, I'm, you know, this cowherd boy, and, you know, I live on this block, and, you know, like this and that. We don't have to have that kind of aspect. It's a matter of, we're servant of Krishna. That's the generic thing. That's what's there. All the Vaishnavas have that. Then, depending upon, then that attraction to Krishna, then it'll be in majesty or in sweetness, and then within that, then they'll have more specifics. Is that something?
Yeah.
Also in this point, Maharaj, actually the Vaishnava Acharyas, they don't even consider the success as leaving the material world and going to the spiritual world. Mm. The success is I always remain, even as a dog, under in some Vaishnava's home. Mm. The success is that practice, so that like for us, like you know, elevating consciousness, success means getting liberated from material world and going to spiritual world. But it's not even about that. It's about being situated in the platform of eternal service to Krishna and that which we get by Vaishnava's mercy.
Mm.
So in that sense, actually, there is never a point that there is any endeavor in that direction to do something on a platform to elevate oneself from here to there.
Hmm. Yeah, because so, does that make sense?
Yeah.
So, in other words, if we focus on the devotional aspect, then that inspiration is there. If we focus on the religious aspect, then we may find difficulty. If we are, let's say, pious or religious by nature, then following that religious activity may be something we can do. And we'll definitely get purified because it is in the context of Krishna consciousness. You're associating devotees, you're doing devotional activities. But at some point the consciousness needs to change from that it's about the religious activity, that it's that religious activity is the medium, it's not the goal. Right? And so then from there, then it's about pleasing Krishna. So the religious activity is useful because of its connection to Krishna. Right? The materialists use the same religious activities for their own purpose. So it starts from Krishna. Right? Religion comes from Krishna. It's not that there's other things. Does that make sense? You know, even in the world religions, they say they got that from the Lord. The Lord revealed to them, and then that particular religious process started. Does that make sense?
Yeah, so basically we can say that we enjoy the process itself rather than the fruit or end result of that process.
Yes, we get too absorbed in the process. So, and that's where the Niyamagraha will come up. We're following the process, but we're forgetting what the actual goal is. Of course, as devotees, someone can mention it, and the covering is very light. You know, it's like the dust on a mirror. You know, as soon as someone mentions it, or you sit in the class and you hear, then you immediately understand. It's not like the karmis where you explain and they can't understand. So like that. Or it's about that, so we don't have to follow these. Then that's the other aspect of Niyamagraha. So that's the thing, is that, you know, I follow it because I get the result, or if I don't get the result from this, why do I follow it? No, the point is you get the result by pleasing Krishna. Krishna is pleased when you follow your work with the proper attitude. Otherwise, if you don't have the proper attitude, then how will it be bhakti? How can you interact with Krishna? Right? Because there's a particular attitude of devotion that's there and commitment to Krishna, and therefore Krishna reciprocates that. Because he can only reciprocate as much as you are committed. You're not committed, how can he, you know? So it's a matter of a dynamic relationship. But now the point is you have that relationship, how is that expressed? You do something. Right? So therefore, then duties are in the context of the relationship. Like, let's say, two friends, they go out for lunch. It's not about the lunch, it's about spending time together. Right? And the lunch happens to be something they can do, or they go for a walk, or, you know, it's like, you want to spend time with someone, then you do something. So that's the whole point of the sadhana is, you want to please Krishna, so you do something to for that interaction. It's not that I do this, I get the result. It means no, but the result, unless it's for Krishna, what's the point? So that's why the jnana and kriya on their own, they have meaning when they're connected to Hladini for Krishna's pleasure. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
That's the quality of the devotee. Avasya Rakive Krishna, E Vishwas. Like, he has complete faith that Krishna will definitely protect and then, no, give the mercy. Because that's what, like, he doesn't worry about the uncovering. Because it's the nature of the Lord and it's the nature of the devotee in a pure state. So there is no point of even being anxious on that, in that direction.
Okay. He has that faith that Krishna will take care. You just know Krishna is going to take care. It's just a matter of when and how. Because if you're absorbed in Krishna, that's the point. And then you're trying your best to do something, and then you see sometimes it works, sometimes this doesn't. That's why in the past times you see that sometimes things work out the way you want, sometimes they don't. But then they have that, they always go on with Krishna. It's just like Draupadi's, you know, absorbed in Krishna, so Krishna provides all the cloth. Then later on when Krishna comes and she's complaining about why it took you so long, and everything like that. And so, you know, these things, it's a basis of interaction. Yes.
The whole point of this sandarbha and bringing out initially about the jiva, that his original qualities, how we can see that they're still dormant, even though we are covered by so many things.
Mm-hmm.
And then next, when we discuss about the material energy, how at the universal level also the satkaryavad, that like, no, the cause is dormant in the effect.
Okay.
On a universal level and on the individual jiva level, is only to inspire the jiva to not worry about the material world and focus, keep
on
focus
the supreme.
On the supreme, and then perform his bhakti.
Yes.
So it's coming in Paramatma.
Yes, yeah. It's coming up. Because now we're dealing with the jiva.
Okay.
Next adhyaya. There's two more adhikaras.
So it means the next book.
Next book.
Next book's just on material energy, basically.
Yeah, and then also how the Lord, as supreme, is beyond.
Ah, okay, and then how the Lord's beyond.
Beyond and then.
So he's explained the position of the Lord, position of jiva. Or did they start with the Lord?
Yes.
Started with the Lord, then the jiva, then the material energy, and then how he's beyond all these.
Mm-hmm. Then it takes from there to Bhagavan. Here almost it's established as Bhagavan. Then how Krishna is the original Bhagavan is the next.
And then that's, okay. That's Krishna Siddhartha.
So the first three sandarbhas in that sense, like all the Vaishnavas can appreciate and apply so much.
Mm.
From Krishna sandarbha, then it starts turning more for Gaudiya Vaishnavas.
Oh, okay. Means the first three sandarbhas, Tattva, Bhagavat, and Paramatma, that any sampradaya could appreciate, because it just defines exactly the Vaishnava perspective on the nature of, you know, chit, achit, and ishwar.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and everybody knows it's about bhakti. But then the particular flavor and taste of that bhakti, then at Krishna Sandarbha, it starts to take it more in the direction of Krishna.
Establish the position of all the relationships, position of Krishna as the supreme, and all the relationships, like how Radharani is the supreme most and everything.
Mm.
Then once discussed about all the positions, now you can go for bhakti and then how you can apply it so deeply.
Mm-hmm.
And then what then, taste you'll get.
Is then the what the taste is, yeah. Very scientific, huh? The ability to reveal things means its natural ability to reveal other things. Effulgence is sometimes classified as its quality because it always takes shelter of the substance that depends on it. It can never be said that the object with it parts. It is never said that the object with its parts is depleted when it spreads its effulgence, since one would then see gems in the sun disappear after radiating effulgence. Just as a lamp is termed the source of qualities, since it has the interesting thing is that scientists will say, no, it's just a matter of time. But then when we talk eternal, then they can't relate to it. You know, You think you want to talk big time? We can talk big time. You know? Just as a lamp is termed the source of qualities, since it has unfailing qualities like effulgence, so the jiva is the source of qualities, since it is endowed with unfailing qualities. Though the jiva's anu, it pervades by its qualities. That quality of consciousness is unbroken, but by the shakti called avidya karma, the consciousness contracts or expands. So it's never broken. It just becomes covered so we don't see it, or expands more. You know, like we were saying, someone follows sadhana, but their motive is material benefit. They'll be purified of particular lower levels of consciousness, and it'll bring it up more towards goodness. But there is that element of passion there, and a touch of ignorance, because they think that's important. Now, if they go for liberation, the same sadhana, then that will take them to a higher level, because they'll get more purified. They can get to Vishuddhisattva. Right? But the problem is because they don't actually understand their relationship with the Lord. Therefore, they'll come back down into these other, because you have to have taste. And they're not getting a taste from that. It's not dynamic enough, because you have Satchitananda, you have a combination. It's not just existence, not just the happiness from existing. It's happiness from interaction. So they'll have to come back and interact. But then if you follow the same sadhana in devotion to Krishna, then you get bhakti. Then you move forward to a relationship with the Lord. You develop that rati with the Lord. Yeah. Purva paksha, the doubt. The followers of the Advaitas say that the jiva is a bifurcation of Brahman. Its reflection or its shadow. Jiva appears in three ways. So these three ways means bifurcation, reflection, or shadow?
No.
No, okay. It is considered sukshma or small simply because of its upadi of intelligence. Okay, so now they're saying is that the intelligence is the problem. It's an upadi. So then why are they so proud of being so intelligent and logical? Because that's an upadi. So the bigger your upadi, the more problem. Jiva is like the sky cut by a sharp tool, like the sun reflected on particles of sand, or like the shadow created by the sun. Wherever there are upadis, there jivas arise as divided entities. This theory also rejects the idea that the senses, like the jiva, are all-pervading.
So, these are the three ways. The same as the bifurcation, reflection, and shadow.
He's just showing
examples.
Giving examples.
And these are the three main theories, three main schools of Advaita.
The three main schools of Advaita. Okay. Bifurcation, reflection, or shadow.
We come about that towards the end of this book.
Okay, he'll deal with all three.
All this. Smashes.
Huh?
Smashes to powder. Everything. There is another big commentary, 20 pages towards the end.
It deals just with
just this.
Okay. Quote. Now here's giving his shastric evidence. One may argue that all pervading functions operate within the body. That is not so. The functions arise from the senses. The function which causes awareness is our senses. It is only a difference in name. Imagining the senses to be all-pervading is meaningless. Shankara 247. Right? So he's refuting this aspect that the senses, you know, are pervading through the body and everything like that, based on this intelligence and all. Yasmin yau prithivi chan tariksham. In that Atma are strung the sky, earth, and space. Mundaka Upanishad 225. Uttara. This refers to Brahman, not to Jiva, means this Mundaka Upanishad. In that Atma are strung the sky, earth, and space. Since a Jiva cannot be the abode, right? So Brahman can be the abode. So here he's saying, see, the Jiva is all this. He's space, he's that. No, that's Brahman. You know? And then, yeah. Dyu bhu vyad yan tanam sva shabdat. The Lord is the abode of the heavens and earth because he is the bridge to immortality. Brahma Sutra 131. This is confirmed later with prana pricha. The jiva is not the abode. Brahma Sutra 1.3.4, right? So the Lord's the abode. He's the shelter, not us.
Maharaj, these kind of statements generally make much sense to the Patanjali, the yoga system. Yatha ande, tatha brahma ande, whatever it is, how your body is, the universal manifestation is like that. So in that sense, going from a vyasti jiva's perspective, then we are thinking, okay, there is some similarity between us and Brahma.
Yes.
So then he starts shifting from inductive to deductive in one sense. Right?
Yeah, it means there's similarity, yes, because then there'll be interest, but then you have to know how we're similar.
Yes.
We're part and parcel. Mm. And that's the similar, like the drop of water in the ocean. It's similar, not that the water, the drop creates the ocean, or the drop becomes an ocean. No, it's still a drop. Because it goes into the ocean, it can be evaporated again. And then it comes down as rain, then you get the river, and then it goes into the ocean, and then it's evaporated again. But the ocean remains.
So this misapprehension just comes because they want to just think like they are Brahma.
Yes.
But these verses of the Upanishads have a purpose of seeing the connection from Brahma, not in the connection of the jiva, the whole creation.
Yeah, because shelters mean the living entity, these small amounts of qualities, they're taking shelter in the living entity. But by the Satkaryavad, that's because all these qualities come from Krishna. We being part of Krishna, and then naturally being small part of like that, then a small amount of these qualities of Krishna are taking shelter there. Like that. But it's not that it's cut or anything like that. We're always like that. That's just the nature. The Lord is energies and all that, because they're still thinking in time and space. So they want to say there's Brahman, then this happened, then you have the jiva. But the point, no, that Krishna mentions in Gita, the jivas are eternal. You know, never was there a time that I did not exist, nor you, nor all these kings. It's just they always have been there, because the Lord and his energies are non-different. And it's just who he is. So it's timeless, it's inconceivable. But they want to, that's why they're mental speculators, because they're still working within time and space.
Just a side point. Yesterday, when I was taking breakfast, an 8-year-old kid was asking me this question. How can we understand that Krishna is eternal? We see our bodies, we are changing bodies. I mean, we see we are taking, like, now we are dying and being born. How can we say Krishna is eternal? I said, I just attended Sandarbha's class. Here is a question. So actually it's so simple and straightforward. Everybody can think out understanding. I just explained to him, Krishna doesn't change bodies. And then he's fine. He understood everything. And then he started giving examples.
Mm.
This 8-year-old kid.
Yeah. That's the thing, is the principles can be done. So that's why you cook it down, the principles. All these fine details, that then it takes time of working with. But the main principles that everyone can catch.
Thoroughly impressed.
Yes. Very good. Okay. The jiva is not the abode. Brahma Sutra 1.3.4. The jiva, quote, the jiva, since he is not all-pervading and has upadis, cannot be the abode of earth, at the sky and space. Shankara. Right? So that's the point. Shankara is making that. Even though they're saying, he can't have all these things, but he's saying himself. He already presents. It's just like this. Have you ever seen those? You know, sometimes they have those. There's that thing where they show you a picture, and they say, "What do you see?" You know, they show you a picture, right? And then they take you know, half the people, you know, put them in another place, and then they show them an old lady. Was this the picture? And they say yes. And the other half, they show a young girl. Is this the picture? Yes, because the two are there together, depending on how you look at it.
Selection.
Yeah. So there's something, is that once you have an idea, so Shankara can put out an idea that's a bogus idea, then he'll explain it properly. But you'll already think, oh no, it's supposed to be interpreted with this bogus idea. So in that way, Shankara doesn't necessarily give wrong information. He just misdirects. And then when he gives the proper information, you're going to understand it from that misdirected position.
Yeah, this is the difficulties that I was thinking, that Parinama and Satkaryavad, it appears very similar. And then if you don't understand the subtle differences, how he explains Satkaryavad, he follows the process, he follows properly. But the initial ingredients or initial statements are false. So then, if you didn't catch that, then everything else sounds pretty logical. Mm. That's how people get bewildered by that kind of philosophy.
Well, it's just like you say, like someone stands up and says, you know, what about us? You know, what about our freedoms? What about our rights? And now whatever nonsense they say, everyone will go, yeah, great. You know, even though what they say doesn't make sense, it's not logical and everything like that. Yeah, so it's an interesting technique. Huh?
Yeah.
So that's why you see is that there's a few points, these big orators, you know, that big, you know, gurus, philosophers and all that, they have a couple of points, or a point that seems to make sense. Then after that, whatever they talk, even though it makes no sense, people still, they like the main point, so they follow.
With preachers, it's the same. I've noticed that each preacher, he has his, like, main, sometimes one or even, you know, two points.
Right.
And then the discussion is always about that. Mm. Somehow or other in a discussion, it starts with that and it'll
come up there.
Yeah, then it ramps up in that point.
Yeah.
So, you know, different, whatever it is, but that's what it is. And then they have their own audience, those who really like those points.
Yeah.
So they come just to hear a different angle of the same point.
Mm. Yeah, that's true. Yes.
Maharaj, this point, when we come to root, when we argue with them, Mayavadis and Brahmavadis, when they come to root how the jiva came and all, they never give any answer on that. And repeatedly, they give answer on the extended thing.
Yeah, they'll try to distract us something else.
Yeah.
Like we were saying is that in the discussion, first is the point.
Yes.
Then that doesn't work, then they argue over the shloka. When that doesn't work, then they argue over your example.
Mm.
You know.
Then that doesn't work, then they go into something else.
Yeah,
some other place.
They shift to another point.
Yeah.
Yeah, that they think that will do. So it's just the way it is when it's attached. So that's why you see is that there are those that you present and they don't change. Then there's those who you present and then they see. So we see someone like Prakashananda Saraswati. Then by hearing, he accepts. Because he's actually looking. But as far as he's gotten so far is only with the impersonal interpretation. Because up to now, of all the philosophies, Vedanta is going to be the highest. And at that time, you know, it seems for these individuals, they've only come across, Shankara. So that's all they know. But as soon as then Lord Chaitanya presents, then now, like that. Because that's the things that Chintabheda Veda Tattva can deal with anything. Like that. We don't have any problem dealing in such a wide range. So that's why we can be dealing on a very more intellectual or on a more kind of like, a simple or more sentimental or emotional or all these different things. From all these angles you can deal. Well, you see, other lines then generally are more, you know, one particular kind of mentality. Well, the Gaudiya is everybody's there. So that's the specialness, that you have such a wide range of people. Yeah.
This is the difficulty also we've noticed, that explaining to devotees new topics. If they come with the preconceived ideas, it's not possible. Because they're just going to argue and get emotional and this and that. But if people come with an open mind,
yes,
then it's a, you know, it's a very dynamic discussion. And even if they not agreeing, you know, with you right away, then the thinking process continues. Then they come and there's like that.
Yeah.
But most everybody, they come with preconceived ideas to the Sangha, and it's like,
it's useless, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah, it means that that by hearing about Krishna and all that, the heart becomes purified and all that, and that way it's good. But until these doubts and misgivings are gotten rid of, there are always going to be obstacles to application. Because like in here, what you're saying is that in some, you mentioned the point, they can see the point, and so then they can start, they understand it, so they can start to use it. So if someone can't use it, means there's a doubt or a misgiving or a misunderstanding, right? So they can't get to proper apprehension because there's some kind of misapprehension by they didn't analyze it properly, you know, or there's a doubt there, or there's a misgiving there, like what you're talking, they have preconceived ideas. And so, because you can only apply something when it's all these, this is cleared. Because then understanding is what makes it dynamic. When you understand something, then you can apply. And then from that regular application, then you can start to see its value. So that gives you realization. So understanding is important. You know? But that means understanding in the context of you know, it's an applicable thing. So you say, someone who has no preconceived ideas, then you explain it to them, and if they're interested, then they start to actually understand it. They can start to use it. For others, they can't get past that those doubts. Yes.
Also, I'm sure this happens because we have attachment to our upadis from before, and then whatever knowledge initially we are getting, we tend to keep the attachment as such and then tend to apply only in that field. And as years goes by, then the more we hear, we only take it as a theoretical knowledge rather than practical applicational aspect. So when it becomes only theoretical knowledge, after maximum a decade in the movement, you feel no urgent need to hear more because it's knowledge, and I already have filled, like, no, till the top edge. Anything comes like in a whole class, maybe 1 point, some example, that's what you take from the class rather than trying to deepen the consciousness and understand and apply it.
So, because this education means that shravana, it means clearing the doubts so that you have a basic understanding so that you can start to apply. And then by applying, that will improve the understanding. That will then make your application improve, and that will be until you see the value of it because of the regularity. So the aspect of manana then is the dynamic part. The shravanam is the part so that you'll take part in manana. And manana's purpose is to give realization. Then realization, you'll always be engaged in it, and you can explain it to others. So that's the point, is when it's valued, then you can teach it. But if you simply memorized it, it doesn't necessarily mean, you can show others and they can get that far, but you won't be able to get them, you won't be able to bring it to practice. So that's the difficulty. In the, you know, much of the contemporary educational systems, that this inductive aspect, unless they see the value for themselves, then there's no. So if the value is, oh, by knowing this knowledge, then I'll be in a prestigious position, then you learn the knowledge. And if I get a better grade, it's more prestigious, then I'll get a better grade. But it's not about actually what applying the knowledge. So that's the difficulty that comes up, is that one has to be very, very careful that these things are applicable. You know, people have to understand this for a fine. Because much of the time, someone asks me, oh, how do you do this? And I explain. And then they'll say, no, that's just theory. When it was like, no, that's what you apply. Because they don't have the basic understanding of it. Yes.
Also, when it is said that the Goswamis used to have philosophical discussions, that most of the time it is thought they sit and casually discuss. It's actually the class which we have like kind of now. Mm. That after many years, then it's not just you here, then it's kind of your in the stage of manana. And in that discussion, it becomes more dynamic than just hearing. So the actual philosophical discussion is...
Because you're trying to see how does that apply.
Yeah, I've also noticed that the memory is like a muscle. You have to train it constantly to remember things.
Yes.
But then once you understood the principle, knowing the process, how it develops, then you can explain it any time. You don't have to remember as such.
Yes.
When even I don't remember it, but somebody asks, and then I know how it works.
Yes.
Yeah, how it works. Then I can explain. I don't have to remember. Right. I don't have to carry all this, you know, like mount of information inside my head, which is sometimes becomes a burden. I mean, Krishna consciousness is, you know, all the verses and songs. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
But everything else is just garbage. Piles up. So
yeah. Yeah, because the principle is a value, so that means it'll be a samskar. So that's the idea. So the first thing is the mind accepting that this pursuit is going to give a worthwhile samskar. Because our value is the samskar. Is that it's a good samskar, it's a good impression, then that's what I'm willing to work for that. But if it's a bad impression, I'm not. So first you have to clear the doubts that it's a worthwhile impression. Then the mind is willing to take part in the process that then gives that produces that impression. You know, and along the way there's impressions, all these small ones, that it's worthwhile. I like practicing, I like doing, you know, it was a nice discussion like this. But ultimately, like you said, once that impression's there, then off that impression you can explain everything.
Also, it's driven by taste.
Yes. Well, that's the impression means the taste.
Yes.
So, yeah, it would be more the taste from the impression. You know, the taste is the actual important point. Notice that it's just, yeah. It's another. The quality of consciousness is unbroken, but by the shakti called avidya karma, the consciousness contracts or expands. Right? So it's avidya, but then in the way of karma. Right? Because avidya, you're just generally covered, that you don't see its connection with the Lord. But now in application, then what is your value not connected to the Lord? Then by that karma, the consciousness contracts or expands. So if you're on anamoy, it means it's more contracted. Right, and then within anamoy, if you're human, then you know it's definitely contracted, but you could work with it. But once it goes down to the animals, now there's nothing you can do with it, you know. But there's some, you know, they can somehow or another move. But then when you get into the non-moving, then that's completely constricted. You know, it's hardly even there. They're hardly conscious. But the glory is by chanting the holy name, then all these living entities, they all get benefit. So we're having this class here, we're discussing all this, but the same spiritual benefit is got by these birds. Like that, you know. Like that. But they still have to make the determination. They'll be purified. But they're still going in the future have to make the determination that it's about Krishna. No? Okay. No, no, we've already done all this.
Uttara Maharaj, this refers to Brahman, not
Yoga. Yeah, no, but we finished with Shankara.
Yeah.
To make the meaning otherwise, okay. The jiva, since he is not all-pervading and has upadis, cannot be the abode of earth, sky, and space. Right? Shankara. To take the meaning otherwise would destroy the conclusion of scripture. So it's very interesting how the acharyas, any point the Shankara does make this correct, they use it in the commentary. Like that. And then defeat all the others. So generally it's that they're defeating his followers and using the scriptures and Shankara's commentary to do it. Asantates cha vyati karaha. Because the jiva is incomplete, he cannot be compared to the avatars. Brahma Sutra 2.3.47. Right? He's part and parcel of the Lord, so he's complete. He's a Shakti, so Shaktis are dependent on the Shaktiman. The jiva is not complete because he is covered by upadis. Shankara's commentary. Thus, according to Advaita and the Vaishnavas, the jiva is not all pervading. Right? Pritag upadeshat. Knowledge in the jiva is eternal because of teachings in the scriptures. Brahma Sutra 2.3.26. So here it's saying it's eternal, while they're saying, oh, it's just a quality that may be there, may not be there. Madhva kotsam kaushika shuti in this regard for proof. The Lord is different from the jivas and inconceivable. He is supreme and complete. The jivas are incomplete. Because I am eternally liberated, he desires liberation from bondage. Right? Because the nature of the jiva is liberated. That's why they desire to be liberated. Otherwise, if they're just a covering of ignorance and all that, why would they feel otherwise? Yes?
I think when it is mentioned that the jiva is liberated by nature,
yes,
then immediately the next, like, sounds like logical, it is that it is liberated and independent. But here we can see it is explained, it is liberated, but it is still dependent on the Lord.
Yes. Yes.
Which is, you know, by material sense, it's illogical. Liberated means, you know, it's
you do what you want.
Yeah.
Freedom.
Yeah, complete. But then it could be liberated and still dependent on the Lord, on the Supreme.
Yeah, that's why all inconceivable qualities are all reconciled in the Lord. And he's unlimited. He's greater than the greatest, smaller than the smallest. You know, so all these things. Everything's within him, but he's outside of that. You know, like that. He's everything, but at the same time he's an individual person of medium size. So all that is, that's the Lord. When you accept the Lord and that the Lord has qualities and these qualities are inconceivable, then basically all the philosophical problems go away. One is able to appreciate them, discuss them, understand them. But until that's there, that's why until you accept Krishna as Bhagavan, the Lord who has all energies, then there'd be so many philosophical points that can't be understood. Thus the jiva is anu. The jiva is a knower. According to the previous logic, being a knower is a quality of the jiva. Right? So he's a knower. He's small. He's conscious. He's a knower because he has knowledge. Or he is knowledge. Knowledge is the quality of the jiva. Otherwise, how do you get... unless something has its quality, you can't do something. Fire, wood has the quality of fire. Therefore, it can light. Does that make sense? But like stone doesn't.
It's interesting that the karmis, they can appreciate the external, means the energy and the qualities. Because that's what obvious. All we see is how energy is yes. you know, manifest different qualities of things.
Yes.
But then Mayavadis, they can appreciate, but the Karmis, they can appreciate more subtle.
Mm-hmm.
What, who is beyond those, they don't really care.
Mm-hmm.
But then Mayavadis, they're trying to understand the subtle point,
mm-hmm.
the Brahman point, but they don't accept the energy and the qualities of the Lord.
Yes.
So it's this or that.
Yeah, that's why it's karma or jnana. And then you can have sometimes combinations. That's why philosophy goes down to this karma and jnana. And then within that, you have these divisions, that divisions, and then like this, you get end up with the six philosophies, and then like that. So as long as you're not accepting the Lord, you're going to see things different. So just as the karmis, you have the object and its qualities, they'll see the qualities separate from the object. They're not understanding, no, that's the nature of that object. They'll deal with it as it's the dharma, it's the nature. But they don't think that way. You know, certain practical things, then they know, okay, this does this, you know, fire burns, you know, like that. But otherwise, they're not actually seeing how they're connected, because they don't connect to the Lord. So they're seeing separately. So the same way with the impersonalists. They're going to see the subtle aspects, but they don't see how all this, because they don't see it connected to the Lord, then they don't see how it, you know, connects with the jiva, how it connects with Brahman. They can't understand these things. So until you accept the Lord, then the equation's complete. Then you have the Lord and his energies. And then everything makes sense. Otherwise, if you just only have the energies because of the Satkaryavad, you're still going to see that principle of the primary aspect and the secondary, you know, or the quality, that shelter and all these different things. So it won't make sense because you're not taking it all the way back to where it fully makes sense. Right? So,
because for them, in Satkaryavad, although, you know, karmis, they don't use that much, but even they say the original cause and the material cause are one. They
yes.
see the matter as the ultimate cause.
Yes, yes, yes.
Then we know the original cause is Krishna, but then material cause, that's pradhan, that's mad, and like that.
Yes, but the point is why would energy do something? You know, like that, because taking it as the substance, but then that's the existence. But they're not seeing that. Okay, it exists, but what's propelling it? What's doing? Where is it? You know, what's the motivation behind it? Because they're taking dead unconscious matter, and somehow or another that propels and wants to be conscious. But if all this is just chemicals, why do you care? So then, if that's the case, life is just a combination of the chemicals, so it doesn't really have any value. But people are working so hard. That same scientist who says it's all a bunch of chemicals, he's working very hard to be recognized for a Nobel Prize. You know. So why? If it's just chemicals, what does it matter? You know. So that's the thing. As you can see, these are the symptoms of the soul. The soul has these ideas. The soul. There's basic principles of that. But eternity, knowledge, and bliss. Well, why? Because then I'll be happy. Why? Because that's the nature of the soul. Right? Why through knowledge? Because knowledge is this nature of the soul. You know, and they want to be recognized eternally. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki jai.